Now, before we start this local hour here, and Mike Ryan is back in the fold, and Dan, maybe even Stu Gatz is going to be here today. I'm not really sure. Mike, do you want me to get out in front with this public apology, or do you want to save it and talk some actual sports right now?
No, I think you should get to the apology, because this was something that deeply affected my family. While I was gone, minding my own business, look, a bunch of texts came in while I was away, and this is the first time that I've been like, you guys got to deal with it. I got texts saying, Stu Gatz is in, and nobody told anybody. Sedano's scheduled, and no one told him that Stu Gatz was in. Just all sorts of madness. Yeah. A poll that my conservative family members started bringing up to me at family gatherings. I was like, wait, what is this? This would have never happened. So all that didn't really affect me. But one listener caught me in a rare time that I was checking my unverified mentions and said, hey, Chris Cody's talking mad shit about your ugly ass dog.
Wow.
And
that is
I was really taken aback, and I asked this listener for more details, and it seemed as though it was just shoehorned in here, forced. An opinion that really didn't need to be stated publicly was stated about my ugly dog.
All right. That's a good setup. And now the people that didn't hear it are aware of what's going on. I apologize. I never put Roma's name in my mouth. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I didn't describe Roma when I was explaining a dog that I didn't find to be great looking. Mm-hmm. People took my words, ran with it. All of a sudden on air, it was being told to Dan that I was saying Ryan's dog was ugly when that word never, Mike Ryan's name never came out of my mouth. So that's my excuse. Having said that, I'm sorry, because you shouldn't have to hear that. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, now that you have a daughter, I felt like you would take it a little better.
No.
The whole Roma thing.
I think you need to understand, and thank you for insulting Roma once again, because Roma has been my daughter since the get-go. So to me, there is a slight difference in that we feed them differently between the two girls. But Roma and Juliet, really same sort of playing field. So thank you once again for insulting baby Roma.
Your daughter, you physically had a piece of making what she looks like. Mm-hmm. Roma, you just chose. So you shouldn't take offense to somebody saying
you shouldn't be calling anybody's daughter, whether they're a dog or a human, ugly. You can,
but if you're going to tread into those waters, the dog is a safe place to swim.
Admittedly, because of, you know, accepted norms, We accept that we can talk about dogs so flippantly, and obviously you subscribe to that. Me, personally, I would have much rather you just have some decorum. But, okay, you sideswiped an entire breed, a breed that which she is a part of. Now, she is a Whippet. She's not a full-on Greyhound. So
I didn't even say Whippet. I said Greyhound, small-type Greyhound.
Yeah, so there's three types of Greyhounds, really. The Greyhound, the traditional sense. The mid-size model, a Whippet, which is what I have, and the really small Italian Greyhound. Now, I wouldn't call any of them ugly, obviously. I chose Roma because I think it's a pretty dog. But it is a bit of a polarizing dog. I will give this to you because you're not the only one that's come out with a public claim saying that my dog is ugly. Amin El Hassan once DM'd me a couple weeks ago saying my dog was creepy looking. I'm like, where do you get off? I don't call your kids creepy looking. You don't have to say that, because obviously in my eyes, Roma's gorgeous. She's beautiful. She's perfect in every way. I don't need to be hearing other people's opinions, because if you hung around Roma, you'd know. She's a beautiful doggy. Beautiful doggy.
That is what I apologize for. Nobody needs to get a DM from a stranger saying someone's talking shit about your dog.
No.
Nobody.
Nobody. Nobody deserves that. And I got it over the weekend, and it brought me back to my blood boiling, feeling all this anxiety, and then work all of a sudden lapping across my shores. And so it nuked the final week. Also,
so
last week,
me just slapping you in the face with like reality, like, welcome back, Mike. This is what you're going to get.
Yeah. For those that don't know, I've been gone. I only took 1 week off when my daughter was born. So this is actually a great stage to take some PTO and be with your family, paternity. We get like 7 weeks of it here at Disney. I'm only using five for it, because now it looks like sports are ramping up. But man, I had this planned so perfectly. I was going to close on my house and spend a month moving in. Now, I didn't know about all sorts of COVID delays, not just with the closing, because it took me 5 additional weeks to close on the house, but with furniture, you guys. Furniture.
Oh, the worst.
There is a major, major COVID-related delay at every furniture outlet. Every single store you can imagine. Wow. I'm not going to actually be fully living in my house until like mid-October. I wish I were kidding. There were some furniture stores that say, you know, we can't help you out till like Thanksgiving. And I should have, I really should have gotten a head start on this, but I wasn't exactly sure I was getting the house because of all sorts of COVID delays. So last week was the first week I owned my home and was able to actually move stuff in. So I tried to squeeze in about 5 weeks in a one with limited delivery options, but settling in a little bit, finally doing like the proper move of like all that's left in the other house into the big house, doing that now. And then I'm going to put my original home on the market, which is its old new stressful ball of wax.
And so are you, is Roma like sleeping at your new house yet? Like, are you, you're sleeping at the new house? Yes.
No, I haven't slept at the new house yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so no. You really are being...
I haven't moved Juliet's furniture. I moved Juliet's furniture on Wednesday. We have a mattress that's on the floor. The actual like bed furniture is not coming in for another couple of weeks, but getting the home painted, don't want those fumes around Juliet. Now I understand.
You're bringing me back to this process, and I hated it. So like, I'm just like thinking about it now. I'm just like, God, thank God I'm not dealing with this anymore.
Lucky enough and blessed enough, especially during this time, to not have to need to sell my home in order to purchase the new home. And I wanted like a stress-free, boy, was I an idiot, a stress-free, free move. But that's my situation. I'm glad because say I did sell my house, I would have been at my in-laws or staying at a hotel for a month and a half extra than I had budgeted for. So thank God I still have that townhome. But yeah, it's going on the market. Hey, Kendall's a great time to buy, folks, if you're interested in a Kendall townhome.
So what local sports have you been digesting through all this? Like,
I haven't been able to really watch. It's funny, like sports kicked up and I immediately was too busy for it. Thankfully, I got on with all the Chelsea duties. I was able to watch every Chelsea match, but I've watched a handful of Heat games. I've watched a handful of Marlins games. I would have really loved to have watched them for that week that they weren't playing. I was available to watch them, but they didn't really help me out there. But I have been watching them some sort of like second eye in passing because I've just been so busy. I saw three of the Panthers games, and woof. I was just talking with Roy. Roy, they're not bringing Dale Talon back, which is a good thing.
Yes, it's been a bad tenure over the 10 years of Dale Talon's
and the rare occasion reign. that a tenure is actually a tenure.
Yeah.
Like the old Ricky Henderson, the old Ricky Henderson urban legend. Dan, do you know about that the Ricky got tenure story?
I do know that story. I believe, by the way, that without knowing for sure, I'll have to ask Chris Cody about this. But I fear that you should be mad at Amin more than anybody regarding your dog.
Really?
I believe that that's where your anger needs to go more than anywhere. But because the one that I saw instigating that conversation last week off air and then pretending like
that makes sense. Makes sense because he's the one that DM'd me my dog was creepy looking a couple weeks ago and I took great offense to it. So like he's just still out here talking shit about my dog.
Yes. When he heard about it, he tried to build me up and be an ally to me when I was kind of backpedaling, like, look, I never said Mike's dog specifically. And Amin was kind of like, you need to lean into this. You're right. And I'm just like, that's not the point. I feel bad about this.
All right. Well, I've taken it up directly with Amin because he challenged me. Like he did a simple reply. Like that's how evil Amin El Hassan is. Like just a cute Instagram story of my dog being all adorable and shit, and he's like creepy ass dog. I'm like, whoa, this is out of nowhere.
So to answer your question, though, the three famous Ricky Henderson stories. One of them was that he was getting on a bus with teammates. And they said that he could sit where he wants because he had tenure. And he said, tenure? I've got 20. And he played cards one time with Jason Giambi, had been teammates with him for years. And Jason Giambi said during one of the poker games, you don't even know my name. Ricky's response was, man, I know your name. He's like, what's my name? He's like, you know your name. And so he didn't actually answer the question. And then he went up to John Olerud one time and said, hey, I had a teammate once who also played in the field with a helmet. John Olerud had, you know, brain surgery. And Olerud was like, Ricky, that was me. I'm the only one who plays in the league with a helmet in the field.
On another team. Ricky Henderson's stories are amazing. Yeah, Amin El Hassan just comes out and says it. And I thought we had buried that. But no, he's got to come out here, work behind the scenes, and get a little bit more allies, because he was out of line. You don't tell somebody, even if you think it. We've all been there. We've all seen babies that are like, thank God that's not mine.
See, Mike, but let me just for a second. There is a difference between babies and dogs, okay? If you tell me my daughter's ugly, I'm never talking to you again. If you tell me my dog's ugly, I'm just going to be like, come on, you don't got
to
say that.
Look, there's a clear line, because I'm still talking to you because I can't pick my coworkers in this instance. But I'm not going to, even if you said that about Juliet, I wasn't going to ignore you. I couldn't. There's all sorts of
that
protocol.
That would be so rude of me.
Yeah,
see, I think different levels, man.
I think this is also rude of you. Don't discount how rude you were in this instance.
Again, I must impress on everyone. I really do think Amin is the guilty party here, and Cody's taking the majority of the hit here. But Amin El-Hassan was absolutely the instigator last week on this.
Here's my point. Look, I understand greyhounds and whippets, and the smaller you get with the greyhound, occasionally, depending on the photo and the lighting, they can look a little odd sometimes. All right? They're not super photogenic. I get it. All right, I understand. Not your cup of tea, not your favorite dog. You know, there's all these, like, you know, like these little toy peacock, like teacup Malteses that people love, and I just not my kind of dog. But I'm not gonna come
not
out
your
here,
cup of tea, you might say.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say thank you, Dan. That's what I was looking for, that joke. I'm not gonna come out publicly and say I hate that dog or insult someone's dog. I'll just keep that opinion to myself, which is something that I wish that you guys had done.
Look, I might be the greyhound equivalent. Like, you know, I'm a ginger, okay?
greyhound like the type... is a slim dog, Chris.
Okay, no, but like the ginger is the type that like some people are into it, but some people think it's not good. And that's kind of the way people feel about greyhounds. You happen to be into greyhounds as if some women are just into gingers. Maybe I'm the greyhound of the, you know, of that world.
I feel like you're pressing the gas a little bit too much on me giving you a safety line right here by saying, yeah, it's a hit or miss breed. I get that. You don't have to keep pressing the gas on how ugly you think the breed is. Your thoughts have been well known on
this
matter.
Tony, can you put it on the poll at Levitard Show, please? If someone says your daughter or son is ugly, will you ever speak to that person again? Because I think that's a pretty good rule of thumb, but I think I also ride with Chris on that's not the same saying it about someone's daughter or son as it is saying it about their dog.
People, look, I treat my dog. I give my dog a special kind of love. We went through a lot in the early going, a bond stronger than oak, Dan. That's what I've got with my baby Roma. And, you know, I understand there is a different love for a human daughter, an actual daughter. And I'm using air quotes because my baby Roma is part of my family. And I know that makes me weird.
Your ugly baby Roma.
Don't do that. I know you're going for a laugh right now. Tell me you're going for a laugh right now. You don't think she's ugly, too.
It is funny.
You think she's ugly?
I don't think she's ugly. I do not think she's ugly. I might be willing to lean into the idea that her skinny legs make her awkward.
Yeah, it also makes her fast. You ever see a greyhound run in like an open lawn or something like that? Figure eights. It's an amazing creature. I mean, really, one of like God's gifts. You see, when you give little baby Roma just some green ahead of her, man, you're worried the entire time she's going to break in half because those legs are a little bit dainty. And she has broken her foot several times, Dan. It's a weird breed. But you don't need to be saying. You could look at cocktail parties when you're out with Valerie, you can whisper it to her. You know, Mike just posted a photo on Instagram. Roma, not so cute. I know. Let's not get that dog. You can keep that between yourself. You don't have to go to a national radio show and let everybody else into it.
Again, though, I think it's Amin who did that. I believe he tried to polish it up, but Amin was the instigator on that. Chris, am I? Help me out here, because I don't even understand why you're taking the brunt of this, why you're apologizing on behalf of Amin. First of all, given the way Amin looks right now, he shouldn't be making fun of the appearance of anybody, any kind of creature.
Dan's totally right. Amin built this up. I said off, like, we've already gone over this, like, my apologies and my excuses. But yes, this is being blown way out of proportion, mainly by Amin. Dan is correct.
We never got to the point that that Roy was trying to make about Del Talon, who now seems to be on his way out. And this is the most disappointing professional sports franchise that's been around for long enough for us to actually say, oh, that's a representative sample. That is the worst pro sports team in South Florida.
Well, before you go down this path, Roy, just a second here. Do you mind? It's too early to call Amin, right? And just grill him on air about what it is that he did to you, because he deserves it. It's 5:43 in the morning where he is. He says he gets up early. But what I wanted to ask you is, Roy, how haunted have you been by getting in there with the hockey analysis and just having such a great difficulty in early morning speaking? Like, how haunted? Because Mike veered quickly away from you when he realized, oh my God, Roy's sinking into quicksand. The ability to speak has eluded him this morning. How much has that stayed with you over the last 5 minutes or so as Mike tried to pull the show in a different direction?
Well, I need to start drinking coffee, Dan, because I'm not feeling it today. Not enough energy right now. And I didn't feel too great about going back to the Roma talk when I was just about to make a point on Dale Talon. But, hey.
But we had to, right? You realize that we had to because you had the rare combination of unable to get the words out while also sounding super bored and depressed. It's the combination that's not great for morning radio.
I call it the Mantalian. Italian. Yeah.
You're our hockey guy. Roy, you know more about damn hockey than any of us here by leaps and bounds. We need to go to you on good information that has energy. What do you feel about Dale Talon's 10-year tenure?
Well, I feel like the time has come for him to leave. Including this year, it's only been 3 playoff appearances. It's been contracts where players have been overpaid and underproduced, like Mike Matheson. Like, it's just been terrible times here.
Right, we're giving him this playoff appearance because this one, this one's flimsy.
We have no choice, Mike. We have no choice.
I'm not exactly printing an X in the newspaper next to their
names. It was not a playoff. It was a play in, and then they played out. It was not. They don't get the off and play. They either play. They played in, and then they played out. It's not a playoff. They were not in the playoffs this year.
Well, they certainly played themselves out because it was a terrible, terrible series. Aside from that one win. It was a terrible series, and they're going to have to regroup and try again next year with a different general manager.
Lackluster, and the entire season was just no defense. And Bobrovsky was a goalie that put up tremendous numbers with Columbus, but also at Columbus, he had arguably the best defense in the league, especially last year. So now you put him on a team that has no defense.
What happened there? Because goalies can do that sometimes from year to year. Roy, is his analysis what happened there? That he was made to look better than he was by the defense in Columbus last year, and then he gets here and just immediately gets exposed. It wasn't a skill level drop. It's that he had less help drop.
That's exactly what happened. The Panthers' defense has been terrible all season, and they've been allowing terrible shots in front in the dangerous zone below the faceoff dots where you allow most of the goals. Like that, they've failed Bobrovsky this season. This is not his fault.
But it's that's Talon's fault, though. If you can't separate those things about knowing what someone's skill level is independent of their teammates, if you're someone who cannot separate, who gives giant money to a guy who's not worth it because you, as your job to determine skill levels, couldn't figure out that this guy would get exposed if he came out from under that defense, like that's a fireable offense by itself. Never mind a decade. That by itself, given the amount of money they gave him, is a fireable offense.
And you got to keep in mind, over a decade, the Panthers have made decisions regarding the front office and the players on the ice that leaves you scratching the head. I mean, what they did with Gerard Gallant was terrible. And it's just poor decision-making by a franchise that has been making poor decisions since 1996, also, since Bobby Clark left the team.
It seems like an identity crisis, too, because if you're going to go all in, even their defensemen, they don't have bad defensemen. They're really good in the attack. Like, they have players that can contribute and get you assists from that back line. It's just the actual stopping people thing that's a question. So if you're going to go all out and be this attacking side, then why are you making trades like Vinny Trocheck? They're sort of caught in between. Are we going to go for it? Are we going to cut back, save money? What is our identity? Are we going to meet somewhere in the middle? They get rid of Trocheck and you think, okay, that's at least, if that's the piece that you're trading away, this former all-star, a guy that's a good offensive player, you're going to get something back to help improve that back line, right? No, it never happened. So I was just very confused by some of the moves that they made and the money that they handed out.
And the word is they're trying to shave $10 million off of the roster. So who knows what's going to happen next year. But right now they're in line for the draft lottery for the number one pick. So let's see what happens there as well.
Chris, how do you feel about hockey talk? Are you bored by what it is that these guys, we should be talking at least a little bit of hockey given that the team was in a play-in that played out and wasn't in the playoffs, but they got close. So how do you feel about that?
I mean, I feel good about it. Obviously, this is a sad conversation we're having because we got to have to have a new GM come in. Roy, is what I'm wondering though is like who's next? Like, is there a Pat Riley out there? Is there a guy who can we can bring in who can?
I don't want to hear from Roy on this though. I think he just said a second ago that some of the decisions make you scratch your hand. I think we need to get him some coffee. We need to get him some coffee. The one I want to hear from here is our second favorite hockey analyst around here. Where is he? Where has he been?
Dude, just barreling in off a tube. Let me tell you something. That point break right at that sandbar. Ooh, geez. Mecca, bruh, Mecca. Let me tell you what the answer is here. Mike Keenan. Boom. You get Mike Keenan, you solve everything. Tremendous winner. You're with me, right, Roy?
Roy just made a face that suggested
he was... Why are you scratching your hand?
Mike Keenan again. Mike Keenan again, Roy. What happened? No, Mike, how old is Mike Keenan at this point?
He's past 60. Way past 60.
So the youth movement is back at sunrise. How about this? Here's another name. Scott Mellenby. Scott Mellenby, because he killed the rat, dude. And because he killed the rat... We made it to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we made it all the way to the finals, had you. We got the Prince of Wales, brother. We got the Prince of Wales. Get Scott Mellenby back in. Kill another rat. Boom. Back in the playoffs.
No.
That's not actually the second favorite hockey guy I wanted. You know my second favorite is death metal hockey guy who blows out your voice, but I don't blame you. You've been awful. You've been awful.
I don't even know the cadence of this one. Right.
You've been awful long time. Throw you right back into the cauldron, into the cooker. It went how
the
long?
The Columbus Blue Jackets didn't miss a step with a Bobrovsky. And how about James Reimer going into the playoffs, eliminating the New York Rangers?
I don't even know what
that's enough. No, that's enough. That's enough.
Had a little Michael Jackson in there.
Reimer.
Michael Jackson.
Just like with the oopah.
Yeah, so obviously a transitional period for the Florida Panthers. But as Roy mentioned, there is a legitimate shot to get the number one overall pick. However, the Pittsburgh Penguins were also eliminated during the play-in, during the playoffs. So the NHL is going to rig this so the Pens get number one, right? That's the anticipation.
Well, it might not just be the Penguins because the Rangers are out, the Oilers are out,
That to me is the craziest thing. For all the bad hockey teams the Florida Panthers have produced over the years, to never be bad enough to get like a number one pick that is heavily touted as a future star throughout this 20-year mediocre run is incredible to me. The Pens are bad for like a year, and they get the greatest hockey player of his generation. Then they get Malkin because they were bad for another year. It was sort of like the Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck handoff. Meanwhile, the Panthers are out here, and you can't name a draft pick that they've had, Dan.
Forgive my ignorance. Was Jovanovski a number one overall? That was a long time ago, obviously.
I know he was a number one pick for the team, but I don't think he was number one overall. Jovo Cop. You know who else was a number one overall pick? I believe ever, like number one overall in the draft. Red Deer Randy Moeller.
Really?
Not for the Panthers, but I think Red Deer was a number one overall pick. Roy, can you confirm?
A guy who showed up in a bear costume at one of our Dania High Lie events and never announced that it was him and then ran off into the parking lot the number one overall pick in the NHL draft. Now, am I wrong about this, Roy? And this, I mean, no offense to Randy Moeller, who I love as a man, but wasn't he just an okay hockey player?
He was kind of a bust for 11th overall. He went 11th overall.
11.
Yeah, that's a bit of a disappointment.
He had nearly 1,700 penalty minutes, so he spent most of his career in the penalty box.
They're going to move this team to Quebec. They are.
They're not going to move the team to Quebec.
Yeah, that's the next move. That's how you make the Panthers good. You just take them away from this swamp.
They're not doing that.
Yeah.
No.
We're supposed to get T.J. Warren versus Jimmy Butler today, and we may not get either T.J. Warren or Jimmy
Butler.
Wait
a minute. Do people know yet what we have planned for tonight with that T.J. Warren-Jimmy Butler game? Because I got a text this weekend that suggested that Lebatard and friends are going to be polluting tonight's game, that it's not just Stugatz who's doing this tonight, but that and I don't know anything else other than this. Mm-hmm. I just know that we're going to have representation tonight as virtual fans all over Pacers Heat. But do you have details on this, Mike?
All I know, and this is me learning that the Sugats thing is definitely happening. I saw an email chain that I wasn't about to click over the weekend, and I saw Lorenzo tweet out that he's going to be in the crowd.
Oh no!
Yeah, so yeah,
I don't want to watch the game.
Is that what you, is that what you mean?
I was wondering if that's what Dan meant.
How did he get into the crowd? No, no. I got a text from a member of the Heat who said, "Man, you got a lot of Levitard and friends here." And I'm like, I said, all I know is Stugatz. I don't know anything else. Lorenzo? That is a disincentive people to watch.
Maybe Lorenzo is using his accepted bid to give it to Poppy or something. Like, I'm just throwing a name out there because that would be funny. But I don't know what Lorenzo's plan is with his grant. Because I did see he won some pool and I think got in just the normal way, like any fan would.
Stugatz is going to be in a VIP section, I was told. Chris, what can you tell people without spoiling anything? Because you were in charge of sort of whatever it is that Stugatz is going to have in his arsenal tonight. I fear we're going to be disappointed by this because we're going to rarely see Stugatz. I feel this is going to be an underwhelming experience, and Stugatz is going to be angry tomorrow saying we wasted his time.
Well, we're trying not to over-plan and then have just like 3 seconds of airtime to execute our entire plan. So we're trying to think of something that he can just kind of have the whole time. So when we get our 3 seconds, it's funny. Now, I don't know how it's going to work. We might not even get shown at all. So like, I want to lower expectations a little bit, but like, and Tony pointed out there's like a green screen behind these people. So it's tough to like mess with his background. I think you're just seeing like an isolated face. So Tony suggested maybe painting Stugatz's face. I don't know. We're limited in our options here based off how much he'll be exposed and what we can actually do with it.
Watching the actual like virtual fans and stuff, I remember I don't know what game it was, but Shaq all of a sudden popped up in the virtual fans, and it was just like this part of Shaq's head. And of course, he's a big guy, so that's kind of it, blocked like three other people behind him. So I don't know if we can actually put something behind Stugatz. It's like just going to be him. So that's what I was saying. Maybe paint his face, do something where the visual sight gap, once you see him, you could tell, oh, that's Stugatz. He's doing
that. That's another thing in this whole thing is that we thought of this idea a couple weeks ago, and it's taken us a little bit to implement it. Everybody seems to have thought of this idea since then. I've seen Lil Wayne in the games. I saw Mark Jackson was watching a game that Jeff Van Gundy and Mike Breen were calling.
Super, so like, super surprising that we would have an idea and then it would take several weeks for us to execute it. That's not us at all.
We were planning that game because of TJ Warren and Jimmy Butler. Like, we thought of this a couple weeks ago, and we're like, no, let's do it that game so we can build up to it. And in that time, everybody else has done this bit.
You mentioned, Tony, something that made me laugh a lot in the late 90s and early 2000s when you said that Shaq came onto the virtual screen and blocked out everyone in front of him. Back then, heavyweight fights were still a bit of an event in Vegas. And I always felt for the people who paid an enormous amount of money and got stuck sitting behind Shaq because he had better seats than they did. Like, and you simply can't see the fight if because Shaq just sitting down is bigger than anyone you've ever met. Like half of Shaq is bigger than anyone who has ever sat in front of you at any important thing. And I remember always feeling bad for like this monster celebrity who, you know, had a hit TV show, who would get to the game, and worse still, if that person was waifish, if that person was like you know, a dainty person, where they just get stuck in Shaq's ass crack.
There is actually, I want to change the subject because there's some big breaking news. You know, I was saying arguably the Panthers are the worst professional sports franchise in the history of South Florida, but that's only because they have a representative sample. If we eliminated sample from the equation, you would say Inter Miami, because that had to be the worst launch in professional sports history. I can't imagine how hard it is to launch an expansion team during a pandemic.
Mike, how bad was this, though? Like, what? How? They had plenty of time to plan, not for a pandemic, but they did have plenty of time to plan for the start of a season.
Yeah. And I think the expectation was, let's start the season and wait till the end of the club season and bring in some sort of transfer. But the pandemic has screwed transfers up and has really thrown that whole spending market into a loop. And I think Inter Miami's probably going to punt on this. However, the MLS did just announce last week their playoff sort of seeding process. And even for a team that's gotten off to such a horrendous start, the worst start in MLS history in terms of win-loss record, they can still make the playoffs. It's going to be really embarrassing if they don't. They've made it very easy. Pretty much everybody but two clubs are making the playoffs. And they're playing teams like Orlando, Atlanta, and Nashville twice. So it's in their hands. But they just made a signing right now, a familiar name if you follow soccer. It's not going to be the star DP that everyone's looking about. It doesn't seem like this is going to be a designated player. But on his way from Juventus is Blaise Matuidi, who is a World Cup champion. So a defensive mid that does nothing to excite any of the faces I'm looking at right now.
What did you mean when you said they're going to punt? They're going to punt on what? Just big transfers?
I would punt on the Suarez idea. There was rumors that they were talking to Cavani. Actually, not rumors. That was actually reported. But Cavani was seeking $12 million. Willian, a player that...
Didn't he sign, though, for less than that? Didn't he sign?
It seems as though Cavani, who's still good enough to play at a high level in Europe, had a lot of big clubs interested in him. Seems as though he's going to spend a year in Portugal. And they were in on Willian. I know this for a fact. Willian is a Brazilian winger who, most recently of Chelsea, just announced that he was leaving the club. He was in negotiations with Inter Miami, and things got hot and heavy there. But he was asking to be the highest paid salary player in MLS. And he's not a name. Even though he's certainly the most famous name of this bunch, I would say he's probably just as famous as Cavani. I don't know if that excites Dan Le Batard's and other neutrals out here looking
well,
to
they,
get into
they
it.
Really have soured. They soured what should be the honeymoon period of you come out and you develop some enthusiasm. Hell, Mike, even the Marlins managed that the first week of the damn season, and they've got 20 years of betrayals. Like, you got to give us something at the beginning to get excited about.
Yeah, and look, you could say expansion team, but the math has been recalibrated. You've seen a lot of good expansion teams in MLS. So if you're a season ticket holder like myself, you could at least hang your hat on, okay, well, at least going to the games are going to be fun, but you're not going to be going to the games this year.
That's what I was kind of going to jump in and say. It's like the honeymoon without having sex.
Yeah.
Like this is like my honeymoon phase with my team, but I'm not allowed to spend any time with my team. So it's like a really odd spot that we're
Although
in.
You might be able to because they announced their intention to return with some fans, limited capacity. And when I got a call from my sales rep, he's like, you can still go to these matches. We're still working out how many people are going there. It won't be a part of your original plan. That gets moved over to next year. But you get first crack at buying brand new tickets for these matches during a pandemic. Can I sell you some? Which I've had better pitches. But Matuidi, huh?
Hey.
A defensive mid with World Cup winning pedigree? Come on now. He's 33 cool. years old. You should be excited.
Love a defensive midfielder.
I mean, he's a defensive midfielder like in the international sense. In MLS, God knows, he could probably stroll in and get you a Hattie.
Wow, you really did that. Matuidi with a Hattie is what you did.
Matuidi.
All of the
Matuidi.
You said Matuidi.
Did I say Matuidi?
Matuidi with a Hattie.
Matuidi with a Hattie. Matuidi
is not doing anything in terms of creating a buzz because people love the name. Matuidi, no. can you build slogans around Matuidi?
No. What rhymes with Matuidi outside of Patuidi? I'm not exactly sure. So we're not going to get TJ Warren or Jimmy Butler in this game. This was supposed to be the war to settle the score.
At this point, want to personally drag TJ Warren out of games because every time this dude plays, last time he's schooling LeBron James, and while technically, he's only gotten 45 once, every time he starts scoring, people light me up because I objected to Stugat saying that he can get you 45 on any given night, and then we looked it up, and he had never gotten you 45 on any given night, but now I genuinely fear every given night that my mentions are going to be filled with just a lot of scoring, even though he's only gotten 45 once. Unfortunately, he did it his very first day in the bubble as soon as he grabbed a basketball to torch my ass.
Yeah, he's been the best player in the bubble. He's been, since you called him out.
Either him or Gary Trent Jr., weirdly.
He's been the best player in the sport. And now, all of a sudden, that TJ Warren, Jimmy Butler sort of altercation at the beginning of the season has a bit of value to it because this is where it all started. I was looking forward. I had that date circled on the calendar. Warren versus Butler. Get out of here with TJ Warren being on the level of a Jimmy Butler, Dan Le Batard said.
That is what I said.
Well, now you have the best player in the bubble against, arguably the best player on his franchise, two tough guys, you know, they're now at their apexes, staring each other down.
But we're not going to get it, right?
No. Instead, you're going to get Lorenzo doing, like, I don't know, some, like, cup stacking.
Let me explain something to you here that I think is interesting about everything going on with Jimmy Butler. This is an evolution that I had not before seen in sports media, even understanding that the original coverage of, like, even Babe Ruth was a bunch of people on a train watching him misbehave and not reporting it, protecting Babe Ruth's image. Over time, media changed a great deal, and we are invasive in every part of your life. We know more about Earl Thomas's bedroom than perhaps we want to, because TMZ is everywhere. Something I have found interesting is the Heat have now had a couple of these. Jimmy Butler's absences are unexplained, and everyone is respecting it. Like, there are people around that team who know what that is, know what's happening with Jimmy Butler, why he's missing games, and it's sensitive enough that no one wants to violate his privacy by reporting it. And it's happened a handful of times with this Heat team. They have a reporting corps. They have a relationship with the reporting corps that protects them on certain things. I'm not sure it's the cleanest way to do things. I do think it's a respectful way to do things. It's a kind way to do things, but it's not usually the way we do things in sports media.
Yes, and some of those members in the media have alluded to knowing exactly what that reason is, as you sort of highlighted there. They've sent out tweets that I remember before the pandemic, he had a little bit of an extended break, and I think it was Tim Reynolds that tweeted something to the effect of, like, if you knew what it was, you wouldn't be criticizing Jimmy Butler. So people both in the media and around the team have been protecting Jimmy Butler. It'd be interesting to see how the fans react if this were to happen during a very big game.
I'm curious about this, Mike. This is something that actually wasn't reported, and I have since verified through other means just recently, because the breaking source on this information was my mother, and I did not believe her. What I'm about to tell you, the source is my mother, and when she told me, and she told me she was complaining about it for a little bit of time, and then James Johnson got traded. James Johnson evidently was running out before the anthem for a really long time, and it looked always like he was going to the bathroom, but it happened too often where he was missing the anthem, and nobody reported it. Now, is that because the Heat media was protecting James Johnson, or is that because my mother was noticing something the rest of the Heat media wasn't noticing?
Probably the latter. I don't know whose eyes would descend upon James Johnson during the anthem.
Well, if somebody's always leaving during an anthem, if someone's always leaving right before an anthem.
Yeah. I mean, we should ask James Johnson about that in retrospect, because it would have been interesting, because at the time, no one in the NBA was taking that stance by not taking
it. It would have been huge breaking news from my mother. Like, if and me, news hound that I am, just was like, Ma, you can't be getting that right. Somebody would have reported that. That would have been reported already.
Of the handful of people standing for the anthem, no one had Pop being one of them, right? No one. And Pop has bought himself so much credibility, and I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see him speaking to the assembled media about what's happening in Ferguson.
He just, what he does is he takes whatever the question is, and he simply won't talk about basketball more than anybody. I know a few guys have done this. Tobias Harris, you get a question, and they just go into straight social justice mode where they're talking about the thing they want to talk about and not basketball. But as it relates to Pop in particular, he is taking these forums, these basketball questions, and then just turning it into a conversation or a monologue about Ferguson.
Right, but it didn't become a thing around him, his standing for the anthem, because he had so much credibility weighing in on social matters that people respected his decision.
Well, it's his military background.
It wasn't as polarizing as, say, Jonathan Isaac, not to bring up that name, considering what happened here recently. But Jonathan Isaac, Myers Leonard is also a player that stands up for the anthem, but he also has a bit of capital bought up with some Heat fans and his colleagues by how he's weighed in publicly on some of these matters.
Pop too, though. That's what.
Yeah. That's exclusively because, but I, we were all surprised by the mere act of him standing, even for the first one, because we thought he'd be kneeling alongside. And it shows that there is a bit of a division still, and that might be too much of a gap for certain people to close. And you have to sort of, in the same way that you respect people kneeling for it, you have to extend the same sort of respect for their decision to stand for it. And I think Pop is like a shining beacon as to why you should respect any stance in regards to standing. I'm sure we're going to get into it during the national show, because I find what's happening in college football right now, this very moment in time, to be hugely important for the direction that sport goes. It seems as though all the momentum is for getting these players paid somewhere off in the future. It's sort of a vague timeline. You have California doing their thing on an earlier timeline. You have DeSantis paving the way for players to get endorsement deals here in the state of Florida, but we don't exactly know when. Now, we all know it would be really unfair to ask these college football players to play during a global pandemic when they don't have the resources the NFL does. They don't have the options of bubbles like some of the other professional sports do. However,
they're amateurs.
They're amateurs.
They're playing in a system that's unjust, where, you know, Drexel studies show that they're making about a sixth with their scholarship of what they should be making, about a sixth.
Yes.
Their scholarships are worth that. If you're going to send some unpaid labor into a game, you shouldn't be doing it during a pandemic.
Right. But I think what Dan just mentioned is what this is all ultimately about. We can all understand the NFL players working out collectively bargained an agreement to go back to their sport. Why? Because you can ask professionals to go back to work during a pandemic. You and I are in our studio. We're all working, whether remotely, we're all working during a pandemic. And if your job is professional football player, you can understand that if you're receiving a paycheck for it. The mountain that's too much for this sport to climb is the fact that they're amateurs. So it's really fascinating to see what's going on with the Power Five and how this is broken up geopolitically, because now the Big Ten is sort of drifting apart and you look at ways certain states have voted. It's interesting to see how that breaks down and how, like, the Southern powerful conferences that have the massive TV contracts are the most hesitant to do this. The ACC even put out a schedule. The SEC desperately wants to play. Pac-12, Big Ten,
Mike,
not so much.
It is so fascinating to see the conversations that we've been having around here for 20 years about knocking on the fan's head and explaining this is all giant commerce business. All of it. It has been fascinating to see it laid naked in baseball, where Manfred will throw any 25 people out there for the Marlins just to get to the television money at the end of the season. You've got, you know, walk-off homers being hit in empty parks because baseball's going to get that money no matter what. No matter how many teams fall, baseball's going to get that money. It has been fascinating to watch college sports be a tipping point on the tension, because I've been saying around here for a couple of weeks, I've been under the impression that this is done, that the presidents cannot be convinced that these players should be going out there, you know, from the library near higher education and the principles of what schooling is supposed to be, sending unpaid labor out there in order to go grab your dollars is too greedy, even for these people who try to shroud everything in the veil of amateurism and the veil of education. The part that I find interesting is players bucking on it, players putting their voice together on we want to play, and then the tension of, wait a minute, now you're going to listen to the players on something? Now you're going to decide to give the players a voice now when they forced you to, with the way the Clemson assistant coach was talking to his player and the way the Iowa strength coach was talking to his. And if you read what's going on at Washington State, where they're being denied food, or Colorado State, where the reports are just crazy in terms of, let's just slink around the testing. Like, now on this one, the players wanting to play is what's going to sway the presidents.
Well, the players wanting to play during a pandemic is the first time that the players have actually been on a winning position, because they're always looked at as, you know, you're getting an education.
You're so right. The labor is with the fans on this, because the fans want them out there too.
So what's happening with some of the nation's most famous players, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, it seems as though this is an opportunity for the players to seize a union. The whole "we want to play" movement, because I can guarantee you the players absolutely want to play. It, for the most part, they play football because they love football, and it's not. And the health concerns, I understand that football is conducive to spreading this virus, but you can't tell me that they're less safe playing this in terms of the virus than they would be, you know, waiting it out for a couple of months in their dorms doing God knows what. At least you give them the structure. There's an argument to be made about that. I know that because I've heard it. But the players do want to play. And it's interesting to see now all of the presidents and these conferences be like, "Whoa, wait a second. Whoa, maybe we should take this short-term loss for a long-term con. Because if we play right now, we're going to have to cave. Because if we play right now, we're going to have to give the concessions that the players are looking for. An opt-out, being able
you
to
You
got to
give
have-
all the liability stuff, all the money stuff. They have all... The players right now have you leveraged.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird. It puts you in a weird position because, on one hand, I want to say, don't make the student athletes go out there and play during a pandemic. How could you? It's morally reprehensible. And at the other time, I'm like, that's a boss move, using this pandemic to actually get what you deserve.
But I feel like you're being swayed here less by everything falls along the political lines. But I feel like you're being swayed here less by anything having to do with a pandemic, anything having to do with the tensions that are symbolic, and more because you want to see how good, because you know De'Aaron King is going to be great King. For the University of Miami.
So,
and
Chris, this is my ultimate point. Chris,
so I got you.
Point.
I got you.
We got to have De'Aaron King play for this squad because he really says that he's so committed to the University of Miami, but he doesn't want to close the door on him being able to leave without playing a single snap for the University of Miami if there's something that happens to this season, because he does have certain NFL prospects. We already saw Greg Rousseau leave. I don't know if you guys discussed that, but he's going to be an impact draft pick. Not surprising, by the way. Around that program, this was the expectation. His mom is a COVID nurse. They all knew. Considering his NFL draft stock, this was well expected there. And while it does hurt the University of Miami, no doubt, they do have some players at that position that can make an impact and maybe pick up some of the loss. But De'Aaron King, we finally have a quarterback at this program. We finally have one, and like a really good one. The last time we saw him play.
That's how the Dolphin fan feels right now, too. Like, come on, just give me a season. We finally have a quarterback.
Can I see? Look, we have a bad offensive line, right? Well, now the ball's coming out in less than 2 seconds. This is huge, okay? This was the second best quarterback in the nation the last year that we saw him play outside of Kyler Murray. Quite honestly, he's fantastic. Don't rip this away. Don't rip this away. If I can't go to West 32 and do, you know, chugging beer keg stands, let me at least from the comfort of my home see De'Aaron King go into Death Valley without fans, which doesn't make it Death Valley, and pull off an ACC win. Come on.
Here's the question. Do you guys feel hollow in the sense that if the season does happen, that you only get him for 1 year and the excitement of this year completely dissipates after the season because you have to go through everything again and try to find another quarterback?
Yeah, but I want the short-term happiness. I want everything that I've heard about the kid is, you know, you finally have a weapon on offense that's your best player on offense at the most important position. I want to see this type of athlete play for the University of Miami. I want to see an exciting offense under Lashley where the ball's out quick and we finally cater to the athletes that are down here with a fast tempo spread offense. God, we've been wanting and begging to see it here at the University of Miami for so long, and we finally get a quarterback, and it would just be our luck if we don't actually get to see that quarterback, because even if they kick it to spring, he may be like, peace out. I'm really curious to see, guys, what they do with the NFL draft. If they do agree on a spring season, does the NFL draft, and that would feel all sorts of icky, if the NFL draft is like, you know what, for no reason in particular, we're going to postpone the NFL draft this year, just, you know, to keep our free minor leagues going.
You remember when Tate Martell was that guy that was supposed to be the weapon on offense, that quarterback?
Tony, we don't need to
change
do this.
The game. Do you remember that? That
we don't need to
time,
list
right?
all the quarterbacks.
But I went to.
Like,
I went,
know what you're doing.
I know what you're doing.
Kosi Perry.
But the thing is, Tate Martell wasn't in the offense for that. You brought Tate Martell in, and he was all of a sudden in a pro scheme, and I'm out at practice, and he's bouncing them like 3 feet in front of me when the receiver's like 15 yards the other way. So Tate Martell, he's an athlete, and he absolutely there was hype around Tate Martell because of the TV show and because how brash he was and, you know, just a gamer. But then you realize the scheme and it's like, wait, we're still running two tight ends out here? Oh God. Oh God. That's not how. No, we need him to make accurate passes. When I went to practice, all they were doing was the tight end route up the seams, up the middle, and nobody could get close to him. I'm like, I really would like to explore the route tree, but I feel like this is important. We need to get this one down, and we don't have a quarterback to actually do this one. We do now with De'Aaron King, and we may never get to see him.
It still works a year later, dropping and I was at practice.
It still does, right?
Never loses it.
Still does, right? I need to go back to another practice just so I can buy back some credibility, because at this point, I remember seeing Malik Rozier drop back at practice. It's not going to carry the same sort of weight in 2023, so I need to get back out there. But
you got to renew your card.
Yeah, pandemic and all. So the book isn't closed on having fans at these games, but the book might be closed after today on actually having the games. Where do you guys actually sit on this? Because I'm also a little conflicted, because I think this is more about shamateurism than it is about public health. But if the players actually want to use this opportunity that the pandemic is bringing forth to actually get some concessions from presidents, then I think ultimately that might be better for the players. Or is it just the fact that the pandemic is too large a mountain for you guys to climb and you can't ever see asking anybody to do this?
I just feel like I see both sides of this. As somebody who works in sports media and does what we do for a living, I think we need football. But part of me is like, if this is any kind of risk for them, they're not getting paid. This is an easy decision. Just punt on the whole thing or play flag football. But so I just like, it's just I'm split on this, man. Like, but at the end of the day, I feel like the safety should be like, I think we should punt on all this is what I really feel like. But I don't want to say that out loud because it's terrible for our job.
I think we're at a pivotal moment right now where we're going to look back in 20 years and say, wow, the fact that we were fighting for college athletes to be able to make money from the universities was never going to happen until this one pandemic that changed the entire planet, right? Like socially, politically, sports-wise, like it changed everything. We're going to look back and say, wow, this was the moment that the athletes, the student athletes, broke through the wall of actually being paid. And I think that's, I'm all for them being able to go out and look, if we were all a part of a team, right? And we were working towards a cause of like, look, we're all unified on this front. We want to get paid. We want to be the generation of college athletes that break that barrier. How can you do it other by then saying we're available to play if you meet our demands? And I think that's the interesting point. So if they do that and they actually make something out of this, I'm 100% in, because we've been fighting for this for how long now?
That's an optimistic viewpoint right there.
Thank you.
Like that's best case scenario, right? That this is a turning point for all of college sports. I mean, I hope you're right, but I'm not sure if it'll happen.
It was optimistic, but let's turn to our most optimistic member of the shipping container. Roy, where do you stand on all of this?
Oh, absolutely. We need to get the players into a union. Absolutely. Because they can't afford food. Like, they need to be able to eat so they can actually go out and play.
But are you okay? But we all agree that the players should unionize, and they're not being treated fairly given all the money that they bring in. We're all there. But where are you exactly on, you may get all that stuff, but it might require putting these players out there during a global pandemic?
No, I can't do it. Like, it's too dangerous. Like, it's way too dangerous to get infected with COVID while playing football, because the coaches aren't going to get infected. They're not out there over here blocking and playing. So
I mean, they might get infected. Not risking. They don't even know that they won't.
On the surface, it sounds absurd because there's just too much. It seems as though all the momentum, if you believe some of the reports that you see from reputable journalists out there, the decision's pretty much already been made regarding football. So it might be too little too late from the players. It'd be interesting to see if they sort of gathered together the way that they are now a little bit earlier in the process. But if they do actually change things, you know it's because it's a bleep ton of money on the line, and the players just gave you a lifeline to be able to get that entire pot of money.
We are totally headed to every coach in college football being like Hugh Freeze was at Liberty, coaching the game from the press box in a hospital bed. Like, all the coaches just toughing it out because the players have overrun. Can you imagine if the players actually won this? I don't think they can for this reason. Like, I don't think these presidents are actually postponing the season to protect the health of their players, though it can look like that. I think they're postponing their season because they don't want to give in on the liability, on the money demands, on everything. Like, they don't want to be leveraged in a way that allow the players to have the power over the president. So if they just kick the can down the road, maybe it'll be quieter in 6 months and they don't have to give them anything and they could just go back to the same system. It's actually just a symbol for everything that's going on in the American economy right now, where let's just kick this down the road 6 months or let's fight over the economics now with what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement, where just be quiet for a little while and let's see if the system can be back into, can jostle back into place in 6 months when everyone goes back inside their houses.
You took it to a serious place. Let's take it to the sports fan place, because, guys, if they kick this can down the road, and we'll just casually say that, let's just say it becomes spring football. NFL, Saturday games, Friday night games. The windows are open. You're not competing with these college entities anymore, so you don't have to respect their TV windows, so you get a bunch of NFL to fill the void of the Saturday games being gone, and now you get some springtime, big-time football. Man, this might not be a terrible viewing experience. Now, I don't really know exactly how we approach bowl week, and if there's some bleed over, like if the season actually has to start during the NFL playoffs, I'm not exactly sure. But in one scenario, I'm getting meaningful football during a time that I used to not get it, which I can get behind. March FSU Miami, I can do that.
But Thursday NFL football is no good. You think it'll be better on Friday? Like, I like my Sunday 1-4-8. Like, I'm good just leaving it there. Like, I get what you're saying with the open windows left by college, but ugh.
You like it because you have Saturdays from, you know, college game day throughout the Hawaii game to eat into your Saturday and give you big time football. Now you're just removing Saturday college football from the equation. You're gonna want Bucks at Saints on Saturday at 1. You're going to want that.
All right, you talked me into it. That sounds awesome. Yeah, Let's go.
About a 1 o'clock start Saturday where you have that, you know, red zone set of games, and then 1 o'clock Sunday where you also have that red zone set of games, and then you're playing, and there's two night games, one Saturday, one Sunday night. I mean, Chris.
You just gave us two witching hours. You just gave us two witching hours. Now, granted, it's four games going on as opposed to, like, eight during that window, so probably less room for all sorts of crazy witching hour hijinks, but you gave me two.
Solid naps for Tony both nights.
It was. I'm going to sleep both of them. That's going to be amazing.
4 p.m., worst time ever.